is 10:02 on March 26th. So, and for the record, I think we're missing two, Wayne Frizzell and Don Lee will be arriving 11:15, somewhere around there. So, and he has asked me and I've agreed, we will defer action on 3A on the agenda. We'll defer action until Don Lee arrives or some reasonable time after that. A few general comments, and by the way, I don't think I have seen, and I apologize if TCEQ staff has sent us minutes from the last meeting. Have we received those? Are they in our group, our package? Okay, I apologize. Here it is, right in front of me. I've not had any time to peruse this. Do we want to take action on this or wait till everybody has time later to look at it? Okay, let's wait. All right, the policy for, and this is kind of a loose policy, I'll admit, for public comments is we'll just have a reasonable standard, recognizing that we do need to work through the agenda. And I want to say up front also for, and I'll probably say this at every committee meeting. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Emmanuel just asked me to, when you want to speak, just push the button. And when you want it on mute, push it again. So the policy is just a reasonable standard. We have to get through our agenda. And also, as I was saying, I'll probably say this at every meeting we have, to not just the committee knows this, but for the public and for the record, this committee has absolutely no authority. We're an advisory committee, and we plan to submit advice or recommendations to the commission, and then we'll go through the process through the TCEQ. Any other general comments from committee members as we... Oh, I do have one housekeeping thing that someone asked. There's apparently a meeting back in this room, and they asked me, if you have to leave, please leave through these front doors and not go through the doors back there where the meeting is. And if you want to speak, I think it's probably out of the table. Are these forms out of the table? I think they are. If you want to speak, they've asked to keep a record of whoever will speak will please fill this out, and we'll be glad to hear from you. Thanks for coming. If there's no general comments from the committee, I'll be glad to hear those, any high-level comments as we go forward. As I said, we will defer action on item 3A, and we'll get into the equipment and categories list. And again, I've slightly changed this on the agenda. Before, it was compelling evidence standard, and I'm not an attorney, and apparently that means a lot more to attorneys. And it does say that in the law. It is compelling evidence to either add or remove items from the list. And we're only looking at that because it's required to review these equipment categories lists every 3 years, I believe. So that's why we're here. And any other comments from the staff, TCEQ staff, before we go forward? Did I cover everything that... Joe? All right, thank you. Well, that will jump into Part A in the flow chart, and I'll leave that open for discussion. Who wants to lead on this issue? How about TCEQ staff? If you did provide us some information the last time.
Bob, I'm trying to remember what happened. This is Cyrus. I'm trying to remember what happened last time, but I remember we went through Part A, And didn't we sort of agree that TCQ was going to come back with a little more detail on the, on this Part A?
Yes, I think that's right.
Okay.
I have handwritten notes on mine, but I think they were going to follow up. Is our recollection correct for Emmanuel or whoever else wants to?
I'm Joseph Thomas with the TCEQ. Be glad to address any issues, questions you all have on the ECL. Not sure exactly what all you want to hear, though, so. But I also brought my own handwritten notes here. Do y'all want me to just go through the changes again, or?
I'll go ahead and discuss one item that we can dispense of, and that is item M15 that Wayne Frizzell had asked us to, and 16. And I'd responded, that relates to drilling rigs. I don't have that in front of me right now, but it's here, I can always go to the actual rules. I apologize, we're getting there. M15 is drilling mud recycling system. M16 is drilling rig spill response equipment. He had requested that we take a look at those items and possibly adjust those. And I submitted a response the last time TCEQ staff had commented on that that equipment does. And I don't put words in your mouth too much, Ron. But go ahead. I'll let you talk.
Well, we commented last time that, it's Ron Hatlett, that the mud recycling system we limited to those portions that were controlling the mud from being released onto the ground. There was a statement someone else made about the maybe they controlled air emissions. From what we can find, there's a new system out that's not in use yet that does control emissions, air emissions off of them too, but that's not in use. But we do include the shakers and the cones in the determination, and that was one issue that was raised, is that really pollution control, or is that to prepare the mud for reuse? So.
And outcome, was there any, I mean, based on your review again, did you see any change in?
We're not proposing any change, no.
Can you repeat the sentence you said before his question? That there was some question?
There was a question raised when if you read the ECL description, it includes the shaker screens and the desilter cones in it along with the tanks. And there was a question raised is whether or not that's pollution control equipment or if it's really to allow them to reuse the mud, and we consider them to be a recycling operation that does allow them to it removes the waste mm-hmm. from the mud, which is why we had them on the list.
So the only thing on the list are just components of the system?
Of the mud system. The use determination specifically excludes the pumps, which are were the big issue, the pumps that move the mud around.
And I again sent an email and requested additional comments from my industry counterparts, and I didn't get any different answer from what I had before.
Okay. And then the other one, the M16, the blowout preventers, that's one of two blowout prevention systems that there are. This is the one that's more destructive. It's the one that rams the cylinder down into it and closes off the wellhead. And we grant that because it is destructive to the wellhead. You wouldn't use it for any other reason than to stop
pollution.
The event.
Right.
Whereas the other one is, they're just valves. You close and open the valves. Mm-hmm. And we specifically exclude those in the use determination.
Any other questions, discussion on these?
Not on these, but I wondered, I saw that the TCEQ release this week proposed regulations on oil and gas drilling, some new rules, and I don't know if we can anticipate, because of those rules, there'll be additional pollution equipment that would be required that wouldn't be on these lists. I don't know enough about the oil and gas industry to know that, but I think it's more just registration requirements, et cetera, but it may be something that we want to ask whether we could anticipate changes because of those rules, because there'll be more stringent, you know, air emission requirements, et cetera.
I mean, but they would always have the ability to fall under a different tier.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, thank you, Cyrus. Do I hear a motion on this? If there's no additional discussion, we'll have a, once we get a second on a motion, we always have an option for more discussion.
A motion to leave as is.
Second?
A second.
Any additional discussion? I don't move too quickly on any issues, so. All right. Having said that, those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Those opposed, say no.
I'm sure Wayne would say no if he were here, but.
Sorry he's not here. Motion carries. Thank you, Ron. All right, Joe?
And would y'all like for me to go through the changes that that were marked previously again, or anything specific?
What is the pleasure of the committee on part A? Again, we're talking about the compelling evidence requirement, and we did have some notations when we went through before. Some were clerical, some were typos, actually. Some were pretty easy changes.
Yes.
And does the committee actually, I think I might have asked this last time, it seems like we should be advising on policy type issues. Do we need to approve a typo change?
Of course, it's up to the committee what you want to make recommendations on, but I don't think that you would need to.
Does anyone else have a opposing view on that? Okay, then I would say if it's just correcting the spelling, I'd say TCEQ should go forward and do that.
Okay.
All right, well, let's. I think we're all kind of going through the draft that we had last time. Do we want to go through these?
Just go ahead and go
time again. What's the pleasure of the committee? Yeah, for the record, that's a good. Thank you, Greg. We can do that. The items that were highlighted. And in case there's anyone in the audience that didn't get this last time, and I'll start with part A. A40, I apologize, that's a typo. So A41, and I think that the you want to add recovery before between byproduct and improvement at the end, right?
On A41, the last sentence could be possibly stripped out if it's covered in the introductory paragraph. And also adding, I don't have on my notes here anything about recovery.
Is there any practical impact from this change?
No.
Okay.
You're going to take out that last sentence?
If it's moved to the introductory paragraph.
When you say introductory paragraph, you mean
the paragraph right just above the list there. Mm-hmm. It's not marked in the copy that y'all have there, but that's something we're discussing.
All right, since this is deleting a sentence, perhaps we do need to take a motion on this.
Okay.
I don't know. I'll take advice from any of you.
Sure, I'll move that we strike the last sentence of item A41, is it?
A41,
yes.
A41.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? All right, we'll call a vote. Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion passes to strike the last sentence of A41. A43
was marked. It is a 50% item, so it's not a
fully pollution control equipment, and discussions are as to whether or not that would belong on the list, or if it would be better covered as a partial use determination.
Okay, so your
reasoning on that is we don't have anything that shows us that it's 50% in all cases. 50% is an average over a variety of types of projects.
As I recall, that's the general comment for pretty much every everything under 50% or under 100%. Any discussion on this item?
I'm curious, why is this a partial exemption, I guess? If you're recovering refrigerant that's, a known contaminant, I understand there's a recycling aspect to it, but it just seems to me that the primary purpose of that equipment is really to recover that refrigerant.
The recycling aspect, if I understand correctly, is the reasoning behind 50%.
Recycling is an economic benefit, and that's why you...
Exactly. It has production uses. You're basically recovering the material to use it in your systems again. It's offsetting those costs.
Well, I can see the logic for a dual benefit, with that logic, I can see 50%. So, again, I'm thinking compelling evidence. Do we need... you suggest we change this? Or leave it?
Without knowing you talk about it, 50% is not always the correct number. Can you go a little bit more detail about this?
I don't know myself. These are fairly old applications before I was in the...
Are we saying that sometimes it's 45 and sometimes it's 55, or are we saying sometimes it's 10 and sometimes it's 90?
I understand that it's somewhat wider than, I don't know what the range is, but it's fairly wide.
Do we have a lot of applications in this category?
No, sir.
It's probably legal. I just can't see that there's a lot of exemption involved with this particular activity.
Go ahead. On these issues of less than 50%, we do not have the data to be able to calculate where it comes from. All of them that are less than 100%. We do not have the data, and that's why we want to remove them, so that individual applicant that want to submit application for this particular equipment will submit the data that we can use to calculate the use percent.
But this doesn't necessarily mean that it wasn't, at the time it was set up, wasn't a logical reason for the 50%. It could have been the person retired from TCEQ or whatever. And you just don't know now.
We don't know now.
Okay.
But I guess in existing applications, you have ranges from what Roland was talking about, 10 to 90% on old applications. Or are those gone? And
we do not have any data.
They're gone at this point?
No.
Do you have any idea about the magnitude? Are we talking about $100,000, $10 million, $100 million?
No, we don't have that. That moment.
Do y'all have any threshold on when you're looking at an exemption, and if it's under $1 million, it goes this way. If it's over $30 million, it goes that way.
We do not generally evaluate application that way. Our evaluation does not have anything to do with the value of the property or equipment.
Cost of equipment.
Clarification.
Yeah.
All right. What shall we do with this?
Do we think it's, Bob, do we think it's really necessary to go to each one of these? Is it going to be of much use for this advisory committee to say on A43, we think we should leave alone or we think we should take it out?
I can envision this taking quite a bit of time if we spend as much time on every item as we did on this one.
I think I'm on. Cyrus, kind of along the same line of thought, and it may be good that we ask a question of legal staff of the TCEQ. Is it the commission's opinion that in the statute, in 11.31, L, when it sets up the compelling evidence standard for removal of items, that that applies to Part A and Part B. Just so everybody remembers, the statute says that we're going to have this list, and upon compelling evidence, we'll remove things from the list. And, right, and the commission staff has added that criteria to adding that to the list. The statute says remove things from the list. I just want to make sure that if the statute gives us a tool to not have to go through every item, you know, I think we should use it. And if somebody comes with evidence that says something should come off the list, and that could include staff. I mean, if staff believes that they have evidence that something should come off the stat list, I think that would be a good thing for us.
And my thought was on these, on their decision, their idea to take things off the list that were less than 100%, not because some portions of equipment aren't less than 100%, but because they don't actually have the data to support that. That's pretty compelling. To me, that seems like compelling evidence. It's the lack of compelling evidence.
Right. I would, you know, as long as we couched it in those terms, I would agree with that. I think if the staff, I think it would be a good practice if the staff, let's hear from staff about the legal applicability. If this applies, then I think we should stay within that test and maybe frame this motion or whatever in that.
Right. If there's a lack of evidence to support a certain percentage, it comes off the list, and, you know, at some point in the future, it could be added if they get a number of applications and come up with a number, but it seems like a pretty reasonable approach, given that they lack data.
Tim, go ahead.
Right. Tim Reedy, where this comes from, the compelling evidence standard, and where we've incorporated into our rules to apply to both the Part A and Part B list is 17.14B, and that requires us to have compelling evidence to add an item or to remove an item. Now, I think the thought behind removing these items that are less than 100% off the Part A equipment and categories list is that traditionally the items that have appeared with these percentages next to them on the Part A list were for pieces of equipment that had standard uses, that every time they were used in a certain manufacturing process were used in the same way, and that TCEQ had reviewed them, decided these are pieces of pollution control property that garner this percentage. As Mr. Biber spoke to earlier, and as Joe spoke to earlier, we think we have enough information about these pieces of equipment that we believe there is both a partial pollution control benefit and a partial production benefit, but where we're stuck is we don't have the current justification for why it ended up at 20% on this list, why it ended up at 50% on this list. So the way forward that we're proposing with these rules is to remove those items from Part A of the ECL and have them come in as what we would now traditionally call Tier 3 applications in order to get a better idea of, with each applicant on a case-by-case basis, how is this item being used, what percentage in your particular process is pollution control, what percentage in your particular process is...
So Tim, basically, if you had enough applications under a Tier 3, then they would find themselves back on the list because you would have evidence to support regardless
of whether it's 100%. Every time this comes up, we can, you know...
Yeah, it doesn't have to be 100%.
It's always used the same way.
Right.
That helps me a little. I was wrestling with, does this not have the evidence, or did you lose the evidence? And so I think there's a little distinction there. There might have been a logical reason for it. But, okay.
Go ahead.
Further comments?
I have another question. Thank you, Tim, for clarification.
Thank you.
I've got one just now. On the, this rule or this change will only be prospective. You're not going to go back and change anything. It's already been granted.
That's true for all the changes, yes. It would be from the time that the rules are effective forward.
Okay. So what if we did, from the advisory committee, make a recommendation that we recommend that pieces of equipment with partial, that are on this list that have a partial exemption
currently,
where there's a lack of evidence to support that number, we would recommend they be taken off the list until the right number can be developed?
Yeah, first of all, I don't really feel strongly about this, but I'm going to be the token lawyer here and say that the statute is very clear about what the test is. Okay, I'm going to read it. Okay, this is subsection L. It says the TCEQ, by rule, shall update the list under this section, at least once every 3 years, an item may be removed from the list if the commission finds compelling evidence to support the conclusion that the item does not provide pollution control benefits. So I think if I were to craft a motion and think that we could all come to some consensus, that if staff frames it in terms of compelling evidence exists to not, you know, to warrant the removal of the item, and you craft it in that framework, I just would like to make sure that we're doing things that are consistent with that statute. I'm not principally against removing the specific item that you just proposed for the reasons. You guys are the technical experts. I think y'all probably have a good statement there, but I think we should avoid setting a precedent that I don't think the test, you know, I'm not being argumentative, Cyrus, but I don't think the test is that they lack evidence to support it. The statute, that's not the test under the statute. It's that there's evidence to support removal. And
right. Maybe so I would withdraw my motion, because now that I've heard the statute again, that's true, that it's not that there's evidence that it's not pollution control equipment. In fact, we know it is partially right. Pollution control equipment. It's just we don't have a number.
Right.
But you couldn't... you couldn't, for example, list refrigerant recycling equipment and then put a range of number from 10 to 90% and it's up to the application because it's a tier one. That would be impossible, right? A tier one application.
Yeah, I mean, I'd ask the staff that question. I'm not principally against the idea of some
of having a range. Yeah.
I think the benefit of tier one is that they identify the percentage. I
right.
do believe that is an area where the statute gives them room. I'm not going to sit here and be, you know, unreasonable. I think the statute actually gives the commission some room on percentage. It's just I don't think that the statute encompasses that when we can't find the evidence to support something, we can pull it down. It's not that. It's that somebody mm-hmm. has to show up and say, hey, that shouldn't be on the list. And if that doesn't happen...
Now, what I'm proposing is, could you put it on the list and have a range of percentage? You can do that... Right, because a tier one means it's a hard and fast number.
I think it hurts the staff's ability to implement tier one.
Yeah.
Concur.
Or maybe that's a question for the staff.
I mean, is...
Do you have the ability to do that, to give a range?
Again, it would be almost making it a de facto tier three application because uh-huh. we would be running a partial percentage.
Right, so people would be paying less, but you'd still be doing all that extra work.
Right, it would yeah. be the same okay. process.
Any further discussion on this item? 843.
I guess if we want to get to a decision or some, and of course we're not a decision-making body, if we wanted to have a motion of advice to the commission, it might be that if the commission believes upon their review of historic records that compelling evidence supports removal of the list from the list, then we would support that approach. And I would ask the motion also include that the committee recommends to the staff that that the tier one part A list not be foreclosed from having partial use items. I think the commission staff has benefited where the evidence supports having partial use items, having partial use items. That's not to contradict the motion, however, that if the staff believes that compelling evidence exists to remove something, they should do that. It's a long motion.
I second that.
Any further discussion? All right, we'll call a vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. All right, motion carries. I'll let you figure out the motion.
That's what the tape is for, Bob.
Hey, the next
844 is just for top
graphic. Yes. Yeah. The one after
65.
Predictive emission monitors, those have a production aspect as well as an environmental aspect to them. They are emission, or they are used to control your production so as to control emissions. So at this time, they're down as 100%, and what we're discussing is whether or not that is appropriate for them.
So let me understand, the whole reason they're there is so they're acting as a governor. So you don't emit, they keep you below your limits.
That's my understanding. And I think Leo got in the discussion last time.
Ms. Leo Scherer, I think you need to look at these variables to be able to run your equipment and make sure you stay within the limit. You know, pollution control.
The drivers that stay within the limit?
You can't run it according to a lot of the air permits and regulations unless you know for certain you're within the limits.
It does not have a byproduct. It doesn't have, it is primarily for that purpose. As he put it, is a good term, a governor, so it doesn't, you don't go above the permitted emissions. I personally don't see any compelling evidence to change it, but
I have a note here that we inserted, or at least I wrote in, to Sadie Arnold, after parameters that are used primarily to calculate or determine compliance. Was that staff's recommendation? Was that the committee's discussion? We're talking about A65, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Your suggestion?
Have the same word.
Okay. So was that, we didn't adopt that. It was just discussion and consideration.
Right.
How does that change the definition of this individual item? To insert the word monitoring of process and operational parameters that are used primarily to calculate or determine compliance with emission limitations. Did y'all concur with that, adding that word, that would help or deter this particular item?
I don't think that we've discussed it in any detail at this point, so I haven't got any answer to that.
I think I suggested that word, and my thought was it gets to the statute, whether you put that piece of equipment in there because you had to under an environmental rule or regulation. And it would weed out a few that maybe had some incidental environmental benefit but was primarily productive. I think most, from listening to the experts, it sounds like most would still pass the test if it was primarily, and that's the whole point of the exemption, is just to figure out what was a mandate or not, and that was my idea with that word.
I think it's a good improvement. I think it's a great way to handle situations like this where we're not sure, but it sends a message that the primary focus of the equipment is driven by that.
On this issue, I think the program we have with predictive monitoring, as you are aware, predictive monitoring is commonly used in a process, in any design or monitoring or running a plant. You can use predictive monitoring for your maintenance, vibration, your process control, incorporated into your DCS system. So how do we know where the line is being drawn? But again, like you all discussed, if it's completely dedicated to environmental issues in monitoring, that's a separate issue. But the problem we have found many of them coming in that are commingled, that you can't draw the line between environmental and production or operation. That is the problem we have, and that's why we decided maybe we need to look at it and let them submit it under Tier 3, so that they can give us the evidence what they are doing, so that we know what they are doing, because Tier 1 won't allow us to do that.
I'm not an engineer, but it seems the name itself tells us what its primary purpose is and why it was installed. Emission. It's emission monitor. Am I missing that logic? And again, I don't want to go too long on this issue either. But I tend to agree with Bennett's suggestion.
In order to answer your question, when you say monitoring, or when you are talking about NOx and you are doing modeling, when you are doing modeling and with your DCS, you are looking at your temperature, you are looking at your pressure. For example, if you take a boiler is a unit. Since a boiler is a unit, in order for you to run your steam, you have to predict how much the pressure of the steam you have. The steam is part of your production. How much fuel am I going to burn? Fuel is part of your production. But all these things combined together, if you want to say, okay, I can predict using all this data, maybe what about Minox and all that? So how where did we draw the line?
So is predictive emissions monitor a misnomer? Is it a predictive monitor?
Well, the word they're predictive monitor, if they do, but we have, what I'm saying is that people are coming to us. They are not complying with what it is. That's the problem we have in. The language here is okay, but they are not complying with it, and there is no way we can make them to comply with it.
Well, so
that's the issue we have.
So I guess.
So if you all can help us find a way
to
implement it.
Now, so what you're saying is people are filling out applications where it's really not a predictive emissions monitor; it's something else.
Something else with it, yes. We can. It's an implementation, right? How do you implement that? When someone combine everything under their DCS system to run the plant or to run a unit.
Would the use of the word primarily help you as staff be able to deny somebody when it really wasn't, or to say to them, you know what, come back as a tier three because you may have a little part of it that's predictive for emissions, but the majority of it is really for production. It's not primarily for emissions. Would the use of that word be helpful to you?
I think it would be helpful.
I think that sounds like a great approach, and that the committee would support the staff using their discretion when an application comes in, based on the discussion here today about screening out applications you don't think meet that criteria.
Right, and I remember this being discussed briefly at the last meeting, and there was an issue with primarily versus solely, and there was some hesitancy about, and I guess where staff's concern is that this is listed at 100% currently. And to say, well, it's primarily used for emissions monitoring, but it might not be 100% used for emissions monitoring. So, and then I'm not sure from a technical aspect, I believe what Emmanuel was saying is that there are instances where you do both. You're looking at the same monitor to check process controls and your emissions monitoring. So those things we think are tier threes. So if there's any way we could limit this category to monitors that are solely used for emissions monitoring, they would still receive 100% if those are out there. But if you do both, then I believe we would require it to be a tier three. But we're just trying to shore up that we're not, because we've received applications in the past that do both. They're claiming 100% under A65, but on further, you know, and looking at what they're actually doing in their process, there are both process controls and emissions controls within the same monitor. So in those instances, we don't believe they should qualify.
What have you done with those in the past? Have you given them negative?
I'd have to defer to staff there. But I think that's what we're trying to get at here. We're trying to make this as clear as possible to the regulated community that only 100%. If the only thing you're using it for is emissions monitoring.
And solar would take care of that. Anything else would have to be kicked up to tier three.
Yes, sir.
I'll make that a motion.
So even if it's 1%, something else.
Right.
I guess I'm just trying to get something practical into this.
Where do you draw the line?
I don't know.
And solar, I think, covers it if you're 100%. Solar takes care of that.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Do we have further discussion?
That sounds reasonable to me.
All right, then we'll call a vote, and if it's if we need to take name vote, we'll do that. All right, those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. All right, motion carries. This will be moved to tier three, correct? That's what the motion is.
No. Solely is going to be in.
So we're just adding the word solely. And then that'll give the staff discretion to say to somebody, you know, you really need to move this to tier three.
Right. And trust that, just as the staff always does, that they have a few that come in and they start looking alike, and you come up with a partial percentage that would make sense to put on this list, you'll propose it in the future. But for now, it's 100%, so solely is a reasonable solution.
All right, A67.
I'm not even going to try to say this one, so I can't pronounce it.
I've got written down
Well, go ahead.
Well, I guess I will. Automotive dynamometers, I think is the right way to say it. The issue with this is that it goes to the environmental benefit at the site issue. These are oftentimes used for fleet vehicles that are not used within a facility but go wherever. So what we're looking at is would be in regard to what we're going to do with environmental benefit of the site. If that's still an issue, then we may need to make some kind of change here to account for that as 100%.
So at the site, and we'll get into that later, but you're defining that as pretty much outside the fence line of a facility.
That's how it's been considered currently.
I thought it was commercial versus owner. Like you have a fleet of vehicles and you use this for your fleet versus it's your business to do this testing and you get paid for it.
As currently written in the description, this is limited to fleet vehicles. The commercial ones, that would be...
In other words, it's not your business. You have an automotive dynamometer service and people bring you stuff and you test it and then...
No, that would not be eligible currently under this. This is the one for fleet vehicles, say a company's fleet.
But it's still a piece of equipment that's needed to comply with fleet vehicle regulations on emissions, right? It's yes. For that purpose.
That's my understanding, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't take it off the list because in this case, right, it's not really at the site, but it's transportation is a little bit different than a, you know, a refinery. Seems to me we should, I wouldn't take it off the list, frankly, would be my recommendation. Unless it's not like the previous example where there's both production and this is really about testing the emissions, right?
This is, yes.
Yeah, so it seems to me like it's...
So it's a predictive emissions monitor. Emissions.
It really is a predictive emissions monitor.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, this is an actual monitor. This is when your vehicle's running and testing.
Yeah, so, I mean, it
But it predicts how the car's going to operate or the vehicle's going to operate on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if the needle goes in the red, then you tune something in the engine, and that's basically what you're doing.
Yeah.
And this equipment can be made portable to go to a service center and test on site at the service center versus having those vehicles come to a central location.
I'm not aware of any portable ones, but that is possible. I don't know that for sure, but possibly.
Well, if we define it as on site, they could eliminate that possibility of them actually using it on vehicles at alternate locations, right? Mm-hmm. If those were stored at, for example, distant garages or service center applications, if this is a portable device that can go there, instead of bringing each of those vehicles from that distant outlying service center into one central location for testing, you know, take the testing equipment to them. Mm-hmm. And if we make it an on-site requirement, I think we would be shooting ourselves in the foot and eliminating that opportunity for to be able to take it on the road or take it to a remote location. I'm not sure how big or cumbersome this particular testing equipment is, but if it can be done portable, I would think that would be the way to use it, whether it's in a one central garage belonging to that company or at outlying locations. I don't know how detailed you need to get into it.
I would just say usually the rationale for fleet vehicle emission reduction is because places like Houston and Dallas are trying to reduce NOx from fleet vehicles so we don't have ozone problems. So while the benefit isn't on the site, it's usually there's a regional benefit within that airshed. And I'd be supportive of just leaving it on if we're talking about, you know, it's not for product, you know, it's not their business. It's...
From the last meeting when we discussed this item were that we were talking about it being exempt if it were self-use, not for profit. What you said, Greg, is what I understood this to be about.
Yeah, because, I mean, if I bought one and put it in my garage and brought cars in, I'm making money off of it. It's my sole business is to test cars versus if I bought one for my fleet and I'm doing it in-house to make sure my fleet is compliant or whatever your business is.
Yeah, I think when the advent of these emissions testing stations came up, for air attainment quality purposes, people were going into business in buying this equipment for profit, for testing purposes, for the public to come in and charge them per vehicle for testing. And I think the intent here is not to exempt for that purpose. But if somebody buys one because they have 100 vehicles in their company fleet and they want to do their own testing, then it should be exempt. It should be at 100%. And that was my understanding of the staff's question here. So we were going to, I think, try to add some verbiage to this that basically made it to where if it was for self-use, not for profit, then it should be on the list, just to clarify it.
So you don't think the word fleet is enough?
It already says in-house, right?
In-house, right.
So my recommendation would be, I would make the motion, let's just leave it on the list.
It seems right, we have like a motion, do we have a second?
Does it require a motion to not make a change?
I don't know. Well, I guess we don't need a motion.
I think it's okay to go on record that we discussed it.
I recommend no change on item A67.
All right, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
A second.
All right, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. And it will, A67 will be unchanged. A80.
On A80, the change is in the description. Currently, it reads emissions from engines and boilers. And what our discussions have been as to, is that too narrow? Should we change that to something like combustion systems? So this might be available to other types of emission sources. Primary use is for engines and boilers, but there may be some others as well.
I think that's a valid question. As a lot of these descriptions have developed over time. Any discussion on this item?
In staff's recommendation is to strike engine/boilers and replace it with combustion.
That's what our discussion has been, yes.
I'd make a motion to make that change to item A80, and we recommend that change be made to item A80, strike engines/boilers in the parenthetical. Actually, it's not a parenthetical, it's the end of the sentence, and replace it with combustion.
All right, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, we'll call the vote. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed say no. Motion carries. A86. I've got a question mark beside this. Where are we going to delete this? Because it's covered somewhere else.
Yeah. Burners out of service is also an old type of technology we're not seeing applications for currently. But.
And you apparently have not received very many applications for this item.
Not as far as I know of. I'm not aware of any myself.
This is Paul Kuhn. I'm just wondering if that's a reason to not have it on the list. I know that it has been used and it's out there. It would seem to qualify. So,
yeah. We are, of course, open to any input on that.
Sir?
We are, of course, open to any input on that issue.
My only question is what happens if it comes back in service?
We don't have an answer for that, apparently.
No. If one of the burners that was out of service is placed back into service? Yes.
That's not what this is about, is
yeah,
it? These phased in and out, according to the, don't they?
From the discussions that we have, my understanding of how this works is they had many burners in a heating chamber for furnaces or boilers and all in the past. They weren't placed
necessarily to control NOx, you'd have hot spots. One of the ways that that was alleviated was to take certain burners permanently out of service. The fuel supply was cut off to them, is my understanding. But you would leave the burner there so you wouldn't have to patch a hole, basically.
I would just say that we should refrain from removing things from the list that could still have relevance. I don't think it's a good basis to be pulling things down just because we haven't seen applications recently. I mean, there might be a different combustion technology, you know, on the market in the future, or maybe a new fuel where this might make sense. I just don't think this looks like pollution control. It just hasn't been used very much is what I'm hearing, and I don't think that's a basis to remove it from the list.
What gets the exemption if this kicks in? Is it 100% of everything, or is it just the burners that have been taken offline?
It's the burners that are out of service, the specific burners.
What was staff's recommendation on this? I don't remember what we all tried to accomplish. Seeking from this committee, what was your purpose of having this one questioned?
What our discussion has been?
No, what is staff's recommendation? What are y'all asking for? On this particular item, too.
I mean, at this point, we're still discussing whether or not this is an appropriate thing to still have on the list.
Okay. So you're just asking for input from this
yes.
committee. Okay.
It seems, I'm going back to the same term, it seems like we don't have compelling evidence to take it off. This is what I'm kind of hearing. I don't know if everyone else is along that agrees. Do we have a...
The one thing that sort of is confusing to me is this hot spot discussion. I mean, reducing NOx emissions sounds very good. The hot spots, isn't that something if you have too many burners on some piece of equipment? And it sounds like more of a production issue for how you run your furnace. You don't want to overheat a section of it. Doesn't sound like NOx emissions. So that's the only thing that's confusing to me. I'd question whether the hot spots has anything to do with this, unless it's a specific term related to NOx that I'm not really aware of.
I haven't actually seen any applications myself, but that is my understanding of why this was done.
The few applications that we've seen on this item, that's how they describe them, is hot sections within the furnace. And by controlling the temperature better throughout the furnace, they reduce the NOx. That's been the explanation.
Okay, I think I'm going to go back on what I said earlier in response to Leo, that unless there is a motion on this particular one, I don't think we need a motion. We can go forward. Does anyone have a desire to make a change on this? I'll be glad to hear a motion from anyone if you do. All right, I think we'll go forward then. A89, I think I missed my notes on this one, I don't know.
I believe the next one is A87, which was a 20% item, the lean burn.
Yes, sorry. Same question, same reason as before?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
And I think Mr. Nasty's motion kind of dealt with all these partial ones that, you know, if the agency feels they have a reason to take something off the list because of this uncertainty, then they should, we gave them our blessing, but that doesn't prevent them, if they do find the correct number, from putting it back on.
Right, and I wouldn't, and I think the motion also made the point that we won't remove things just because it's partial, right? I mean, the removal is going to be based on some compelling evidence to remove it.
One of the issues with this is the new NOx regulations. We're not absolutely sure what this will do to compressor engines. The 20% was calculated several years ago based on the lean burn combustion systems as they were first coming into place. And we don't know if that same technology will be used in the next few years as the new regulations come in. So that's one reason we kind of like to move it off for now and then reprove the number and then put it back on once we have a better feel for the percentage.
Okay. So am I hearing the same motion applies from before, applies to all of these less than 100%? Or should we address those separately? What's your preference?
Well, I mean, I think the motion went toward that they're not going to be removed unless the commission believes there's compelling evidence to remove them, okay? And if they believe that the lack of support compels them, you know, is compelling evidence, I mean, it's kind of a negative standard, but I mean, I just think that needs to be married to the statutory requirement under subsection 11 of 11.31. It just needs to be tied back to that.
I just want to emphasize on this, especially this lane bond issue. I personally talked to some of the manufacturers, called them up when we're working on this. We do not, to let you know, all these lanes that we are trying to, we are discussing on, that we presented to you, that you are going up, we do not take this lightly. We take it seriously, and we have spent time to try to get the gather data. By the way, my name is Emmanuel. But gather data to be able to see what we can do about this to make it remain on the list. Unfortunately, especially for the lane bond, we do not have any data. And we went as far as talking to many manufacturers. And based on what the data that we have gathered, for them to comply by year 2011, what some of them have different ways they are going about it. Some of them have lean engine already, and what they are going to do is to put catalytic converter or NSR or SR or NSR on it. And we have that already on our list. So if they are coming to do that, add on to it, we have it on our list already. And if they are going through a different method to comply with the new regulation, then they can submit to us and we will evaluate it under Tier 3. And that is the goal, that's why we want to eliminate this.
Okay, and thank you, Manuel. I just want to clarify, I think it's a given from what Mike just said, giving this discretion to the staff or compelling evidence. I think we're only referring to those that are less than 100% on this list. So in other words, we don't want you to go back to your office and find something else and you think it should be off. So I think that's a given. All right, Joe?
Well, no, I don't have anything to add to that, so whatever y'all's recommendation.
Mr. Chairman, can I just ask what we did with that item? I'm sorry that I'm late catching up.
That item, I don't, I think it goes back to the earlier motion, which you might not have been here.
I wasn't, I apologize.
Okay, that's all right. It basically said if there's no compelling evidence to continue with the partial on A, then it'll go off to Tier 3. So with the understanding that it can come back.
Actually, it's kind of,
so is that what we're doing here?
To be clear, it's the converse of that. Okay, it is, I mean, the statute is clear. You have to have compelling evidence to remove it. The rule says you have to have compelling evidence to add it. We're not talking about adding something. We're talking about removing something that's already on the list. So I think the removal standard is compelling evidence. I totally defer to staff. If all the reasons articulated, I know they're very serious about their jobs, amount to compelling evidence in their minds, that's perfectly acceptable. And I think just so we don't avoid going through too much detail on each item unless we care to, we give them a general instruction that if they believe compelling evidence exists to remove an item because of whatever reason they say, and it could be that percentage can't be proved up, maybe that's a basis, but they should couch it in those terms. It should be couched in terms of compelling evidence to remove something from the list. And the second part of the motion, Don, was that we shouldn't ever remove something from the list just because it's partial. It still means to meet that standard.
I'd agree with that, that last part. So I think what I've heard on this is staff says we no longer have the evidence to support the partial percentage that we've historically had. And so they no longer feel that this fits the category for the predetermined list. You mentioned the compelling evidence standard. I know there's been some talk about wanting to try to apply that to the predetermined list. But am I right that the statute applies that to the non-exclusive list, subsection K of the statute, and not to the entire predetermined list. Statutorily, there is no requirement to apply a compelling evidence standard to changes in the predetermined list.
I asked that question earlier, Don, just so you know, it's a good question. I asked the question of legal staff, how does that apply? The understanding I got was the rule that implemented that provision, which is 17.42B, 14B, took that statutory command, and then it applied a compelling evidence on the add and the subtract. Mm-hmm. Okay, which was a pretty reasonable interpretation. I mean, we support it. But my point just now is we're not talking about adding something. So the lack of evidence to support something on the list, if that's going to be the rationale, it needs to be couched in terms of compelling evidence to remove it. Okay, that's all I'm saying, is that that's the rules of the game. It's either you have compelling evidence to add it or remove it.
I agree. I agree on compelling evidence standard. And I understood that they had applied that to both add and remove for the non-exclusive list, which is part four.
Sorry, I didn't fully answer your question. The answer to the question I got was that they are applying that standard 17.40, 14B, to part A and part B.
Is that? Okay, yeah. So
you've adopted a rule,
TCQ's adopted a rule saying we want to use that standard for everything.
Yeah.
All right.
Got it.
So
sorry, I didn't answer that.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay, I just want to remind us that for time management, we're not very far along on part A. So,
you know, I apologize because I'm going to slow down a little bit. We are actually contemplating adding one that hasn't been marked already for y'all. That is A88. This would just be a clarification issue in the name of it. Currently in the description, this is limited to replacement burners, but we do receive applications for new burners under this. So if we added installed as replacement burners or some similar type of language to the name, it might make people more aware of the limitations of this particular item.
Okay. Any other discussion on that?
Is your proposal to amend the title or the description?
The title.
The title, and to add the word installed or replaced?
Installed as replacement burners.
Installed as replacement burners.
That's something to that effect anyway. May not be final language or anything.
What is the practical impact of that?
It's just clarification.
Okay.
We would receive applications for new burners, and they're not eligible under this. So people are filing applications that can't go anywhere, basically.
All right.
And what is the percentage?
It's 100%.
So,
but... I'm sorry, of the incremental cost difference. That is true.
100% of the delta.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Any other discussion? I think we probably need a motion on this one.
I mean, question. When you file it for a new burner, is there a tier one recognition that you're eligible for an incremental cost difference of what a new burner would cost versus what a non-low NOx burner would cost?
Not as a tier one application.
And why is that?
Because this is limited through the description to replacement burners.
And what's the policy reason why we distinguish between replacements and new? I mean, because we're only given the incremental cost difference. I mean, I understand that it should only be the incremental cost difference, but if we're given incremental cost difference and somebody has a new facility as opposed to an existing facility, if they're putting in a low NOx burner, why would we treat them differently?
Haven't thought about that one myself. Let's see. That's not an issue we've discussed, so it's something that we obviously need to discuss.
I guess I'd make a motion, so we don't take any more time, that we request the staff come back with a way to deal with the issue, perhaps a rewording that would, again, clarify that only the incremental cost difference between a low NOx and the higher NOx alternative is eligible, but that it not be distinguished based on it's a new or existing installation. I don't think there's a policy difference. So I'd ask the commission to come back, or the staff to come back with a rewording that addressed that.
A second.
Or tell us why that wouldn't apply if there's some problem with it.
Fair.
Fair.
I'll accept that as a friendly motion to my motion, or friendly amendment to my motion. We accept that as a second.
Second.
Great. All right. Do we have additional discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion passes. A89.
Both A89 and A90, discussions on these, is again, these are old technology applications that we're no longer seeing. And that's the reason that we've been discussing whether or not they belong on the list.
When was the last time, when's the last time you got applications on these? Mm-hmm. It's been quite a while.
Ron, do you have any idea on them?
Oh, 89 is actually suggested for removal because it's covered under another item on the list. The other one,
which item would it be covered under?
Where's the other part of the list? I don't know, Joe. I don't know. Overfired. Oh, A85. Overfired air.
So A89 and A90 would be deleted because it's part of A85.
Now, A89 is actually a separate issue. It was the technology that was brought to us back in the early 90s that was being promoted as a way to meet the NOx standards with some of these 40-year-old big, large internal combustion compressor engines.
Okay.
That we saw it twice in the same year.
So
we've
89
never seen it again.
That's
90.
Okay. Okay, then let's take a motion on A89 first.
I'll move to support the commission's recommendation to remove it on the condition that it's covered under A85.
I second that.
Any discussion? And I want clarification. I'm sorry if I'm the only one that's slow on this. I thought A90 was going to be under A85. Am I wrong on that?
He misspoke. He meant 80. He said A89, correct?
It's A89.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Did we have a second on Mike's
motion? Yes, we do have a second. I'm sorry, I'm catching up. All right. Any further discussion? We'll call a vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. Motion carries. A89. 90. I'm beginning to feel that I got up very early this morning. A90. We've had discussion on that. Do we hear a motion?
I mean, if somebody were to install this equipment today, would it not still fit the definition, even though you haven't seen the application in a while?
If we received an application today, yes, we would process it.
So I guess there's a possibility that one could come in the future that would still be covered as.
Motion to remove it.
Who said that?
Mr. Arnold has a motion to remove. I believe that was you.
The question I have is there compelling evidence to remove it other than that you're not receiving applications? Is it still pollution control equipment or is it not?
If it was still in use, then I would assume that it's still pollution control equipment.
I'm all about moving forward and getting things behind us, but I don't think we should set a precedent about removing items for reasons that we haven't been asked in a while. I just don't think it's a good idea, so I'll oppose the motion, but I'm okay if you guys want to move forward on the motion.
So we haven't received a second yet. If there's no second, then the motion dies for lack of a second. Okay, then we'll leave it as it is. Go to A93?
A93 is, again, a partial 40%.
Okay, we'll move on since we've already discussed it.
Yes.
That's okay. Let's.
Yes.
A110.
A110 and A115 could be combined. These are both carbon absorption systems. For March 110, would also apply to 115, potentially again to put those together, just like with A85 and
A89. Okay. A15 moves to 110. Is that
either whichever direction? I'm not certain where it would end up.
I make a motion that we support the staff recommendation to combine those two items.
Second.
As long as they're both covered.
Okay. Do we have a second? Second.
Second.
All right. We'll call the vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. A138.
Okay.
I'm sorry. There's a highlighted item up above.
Yes.
I think that was just external flooding roofs. You want to describe that?
External flooding roofs are currently not on the list. These are the flooding roofs that are put into tanks. You have both internal flooding roofs, that is one with a second roof over the top of it, or an external, or it's a single roof, or has another one under it. External flooding roofs are used for pollution control. We believe that they should be covered. They appear to be 100%.
Okay. We have a motion. I'm not trying to push. I'm conscious of time again.
Move to support staff's position on adding these to the list.
For a second.
Second. I had a quick question on that. Under the proposed new rules on regulation of oil and gas, there are going to be new requirements in terms of roofs at the drilling site. Would those be covered already under... You know what I'm talking about, or you don't know? The rules were just proposed this week.
The rules myself.
Is that vapor recovery off the, at the?
It has to do with sort of smaller wells for oil and gas drilling, and for the first time requiring roofs on some of the holding tanks, I believe. But again, this is outside my area of expertise, and I'm just wondering if, since that's likely to get adopted. And I think it's for pollution control, you know, it's to avoid NOx and benzene and other things floating off. Would something on this list already cover those?
If it was an external floating roof, a single roof, no. Currently, that would not be covered under this. It's only the internals currently.
Okay.
That's something we might need to add later.
Or if we, how about this? How about if staff could come back next time and say if there's anything, new requirements in those proposed rules that we might consider, if those things that would be required in the new rules would already be covered under a list, or whether there are additional controls that would need to be added.
Okay. We can make
you
that as
just,
a request.
Yeah.
We have a motion now on the table.
Sorry.
To add floating roofs.
I'll second that motion.
A second.
Yeah.
Any further discussion? Those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Motion carries. A138 was a clarification.
That's correct. Currently in the description, makes no mention about removal of the mercury from the flue gas. Simply talks about oxidizing it to mercuric oxide. And what we have been discussing is to add some kind of language there just to link that to removal from the flue gas. That would be the environmental benefit, obviously, the environmental aspect.
The Sierra Club supports removing the mercury from the flue gas. I make that motion.
The Clinkle Foundation seconds it.
Does that clean call have any mercury emissions? Okay.
I'm still trying to grasp what you said you'll come up with something. What's the will of the committee? Again, to defer to staff on this to check it out further?
I just made the motion that we would support adding that language to make it clear that the environmental benefit is actually taking the mercury out, not oxidizing it.
Okay, all right. Do we have a second?
Mike made the second.
He did. All right. Any further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Motion carries.
The next item is addition again.
SCRs, yeah.
Now, currently under A80, we have SCRs for nitrogen oxide control. That's the heading for that category. Some applicants have been confused as to if they could use that for sulfur oxides. So for clarity, what we've been talking about is adding it. So it would be in both headings. It's a clarity issue.
So it reads for the audiences, if they don't have this, selective catalytic and non-catalytic reduction systems, for instance, for sulfur oxides.
So you would add that to A80. You just add a note in there that says for sulfur oxides.
Too. Yes. It's, as I said, it's currently under the list for nitrogen oxides.
Okay. All right. Do I hear a motion?
We're just adding it here. We're not taking it out of the other one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I make a motion to add the SCRs for SO2.
Second.
Any further discussion? Those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. Motion carries. A184. And I've got a possibility of tier three. So I had my last notes.
Yes, on this one, let's see, this is vapor liquid recovery for fugitive emissions. And this is in cases where it is captured and reused or sold as a product. So there is a production or selling aspect to this. So what our discussion has been is whether the 100% is appropriate and whether these should come in as a tier three, so we could account for various levels or values for the materials recovered.
But would your proposal be to remove this or put some qualifying language that where there's a recovery, they should apply to Tier 3?
This particular one is only for product recovery, if I'm reading it right. The last sentence of the description is that this is for product recovery. A185, I believe, covers it when you're sending it to a control device.
My question was, what is the actual what are you actually proposing to change here? You're proposing to take it off the list entirely?
Yes.
Okay. Could another approach be to just add some qualifying language that where there is a production benefit or a recovery of product, then it should go to tier three versus taking it off the list?
By the description, that's what this is.
Oh, that's what it's for. It's recovery equipment. Okay.
I would move that this item be retained on the list under the prior explanation. I do not believe that's a valid basis to remove something from this list. I don't believe that recycling efforts that distinguish between whether it's ultimately sold or not should be a basis for disqualification. So I would move that we maintain this on the list.
All right. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
But isn't the question, though, Mike, whether it's 100% or not?
Yeah, I would agree that it is that question, and I believe that it should be 100% eligible.
That's what you're saying. Okay.
I don't believe that that's a basis to deduct from these items.
I guess I would need to know, what are you actually recovering? You're recovering something that can be reused in the production process, or you're recovering something that you then sell off-site, or what is actually being recovered here?
Either one.
See, that's the question, Mike. I think if it's reused, right, in the process.
The where I come down is that the alternative is it's vented to the control device, right? I mean, it's the 184, 185 relate to each other. So if it's not recovered and reused or sold, it's vented. And I think the environmental benefit is that it's not, you know, emitted to the atmosphere. So I think that equipment should be eligible. I don't think recycling efforts should be discouraged because somehow the operators have figured out a market for the material. I just don't think that's a basis for reduction. I don't think that's a basis for disqualification.
I think where you got economic benefit, I think the statute's clear that you don't get pollution control if you've got economic benefit.
I disagree with that characterization with all due respect. I don't think the statute says that. I think the statute says that pollution control equipment is eligible, and that it also gives the commission the ability to calculate what the economic, what the, whether the equipment is actual productive equipment. Okay, this business that would put this in isn't in the business of manufacturing that product. Okay,
aren't they when they sell it?
They're not. That's not their business. I mean, that's going to be a fundamental disagreement I think we'll have at this committee about, you know, the idea that, and when Mr. Frizzell opened up our discussions in our first meeting about if the criteria should be if economic benefit is derived, it's ineligible. I flatly disagree with that characterization. I think you can look at intent when it is initially installed, and if it's driven by environmental benefit, it's eligible. It's driven by economic.
So it doesn't matter to you whether it's reused in the production process or sold as a product?
No.
So if I'm doing a business, producing something, and I have a environmental byproduct, some sort of regulated emission, though, that I can sell. And so as part of my mitigation of that regulated emission, I capture it and I sell it on the market. And I get my 100% exemption. And then I realize that the stuff that I'm making, I can't even find a market for anymore. But man, that byproduct has gone up in value significantly. I might even stop selling that. I might even stop selling the original thing, but I'm going to continue to sell my byproduct. You know what? I'm 100% tax exempt now.
I can't imagine where that hypothetical would actually play out, Don, honestly. I am talking about that material is either going to be waste or it's going to be reused or recycled.
But your theory allows for it.
If there's a fact situation you want to bring forward to support a different rule than what I'm saying, the statute's very clear. And the thing I think that we're missing when we talk about these byproduct recycling initiatives is it's not the capture of it that's the pollution control. It's the fact that we're keeping it from being wasted. Pollution control and not disposing is synonymous. I mean, recycling efforts are pollution control.
Could I make a suggestion? I think this is going to be a longer discussion, and we can have it further down the list. Could we defer action on this one item and get through our Part A?
Yep.
Is that
support that?
Okay. All right. There was a motion. There was not a second. Unless someone wants to second it, then that motion dies for lack of a second. Do we need a motion now to defer action on this?
I'd so move.
Second.
All right. There's been a motion and a second to defer action. Do we have any discussion on this? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We will defer action on 184. And please remind me to come back to it. All right. 186 and 187 will be combined from what I saw last time, or what I have from last time. Is that correct?
That's some of the discussion on it, yes.
In the next two or together.
Additional discussion on that is whether or not these are used for production purposes, if there's any issue related to that. That's also true for A88 and 89, that whole group there.
And 188 and 189, was you also wanted to combine, right?
Yes, that discussion on both groups, both pairs.
Okay, let's take those one at a time, 186 and 187. There's a suggestion from staff to combine it, and there's a question about part of it, maybe even part of it, productive. Any comments? What's the wishes of the committee?
And a question on A187.
would a paint spray booth, I mean, is there an incremental cost difference between what you could do versus what you couldn't do?
On 180 or A187, that is currently for the pollution control equipment that's attached to a new spray booth.
Okay, so it's not for the booth itself.
That's correct.
Okay.
Any further discussion? Do we have a motion on this?
Motion to combine.
Second.
Motion and seconded. Any additional discussion? We'll call the vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. A188 and 189.
Motion to combine.
Second.
We have a motion and second to combine. Any additional discussion? Or any discussion? All right, we have none. We'll call a vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. 188 and 189 will be combined. I like the speed of this. 200 through 204.
200 through 204 are all partial, all less than 100%.
Okay.
All less than 100%, you have reasons to believe those percentages may not be appropriate.
We're not certain about the percentages on those.
So the NASI amendment takes hold, whatever that was.
All right. I don't think we need to
check the tape.
A205, and by the way, I don't think we have to act on that since we have before. A205. That's in other rules. I didn't note where it's.
S6.
It's in A206?
S6.
S6. Okay. So the suggestion is to delete it, 205.
That's correct.
Do we have a motion? Motion to delete?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second to delete. Any discussion? We'll call the vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. 206.
Discussion on that one has been whether the 100% is appropriate for these. These have a production aspect as well as the environmental.
I'm curious, and I'm not representing the dry cleaners, but I'm curious, have you received any comments from dry cleaners on this or anyone else? No?
We, of course, are not. We haven't proposed a rule for anybody to comment on.
Oh, okay.
We have not received any applications for these, though.
Are you suggesting that A206 would be taken off the list and would be a Tier 3 application, or?
Potentially.
And is this the same issue, Mike, that you brought up before? Would this also apply to this, your argument that?
I think if the staff thinks that there's compelling evidence to pull it down and we defer to their discretion about that, that they should.
But we shouldn't delete it just because there have been a lot of applications?
Not just because of it. Not just because there haven't been applications, and not just because it's partial, but because they have a reason to.
It's not partial.
Right. Just to clarify the motion.
Okay. So no action on this one. Is that what I'm hearing? Okay. W4, you're going to add some more description to that?
Yes, the word hydrocarbon is really not an adequate description of what a skimmer is. So we were discussing developing some language that might give a little bit more clarity there.
I'd say we defer to staff on that.
Motion to defer to staff on filling in the blanks.
Second it.
We have a motion to second. Any discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. All right. At the end of S, we have landfill fencing for control of wind.
There's also trash. S1, I believe, at the beginning of the S list.
Oh, sorry. There's S1. You intended to highlight S1?
It's highlighted on the version I have. Is it not on the one that y'all have? Okay, our discussion on that one, at the end of that, this is again down for 100% use determination, and the end of the description is for in-house recycling, and our discussions is whether that type of product recovery type issue might affect the 100% level on those.
It's waste material, right?
Self-generated waste material.
Yes.
And instead of disposing it, they'd be recycling it. Mm-hmm. I would move that the matter be retained on the list.
Second that. We have a motion and a second to retain. Well, we don't need one, but we're going to leave it.
We don't. Sorry. I'll withdraw my motion.
Okay. All right.
I'll withdraw my second.
Any other discussion on that item? We'll leave it like it is then.
And now there's another one again that's not going to be highlighted on your list, but something we've been discussing recently here, and that is S7 liners. And our discussions have been whether this we should add to that that these are for non-commercial landfills.
Can you explain the reasoning behind that?
The commercial landfill, the liner is actually used as part of the service to dispose of waste. It's been what the discussion has been.
So is it a practice that the commission does not approve, like commercial landfill operating companies getting exemptions for anything in their landfills? That's the practice of the...
Okay.
So your recommendation is what?
Is to add a limitation that this is for non-commercial landfills.
So move. All right.
Second.
We have a motion and a second.
Have some discussion. I'm curious, if a landfill operator installs methane capturing types of devices and things, you're saying that that would not be an exempt item?
No, this is just the liner.
Well, but carrying this further, I think the question before was if they're a commercial operator that this wouldn't apply, I guess because they're making, they're in business for waste disposal. So I guess I'm taking that a step further. If they're capturing methane or other things.
At a commercial landfill, you have the commercial aspect of that landfill, and then you have an aspect that's similar to like an on-site landfill, where they're managing their own waste that is generated from that activity. I think in the past that staff has given an exemption to, say, a leachate collection system, where the leachate is actually generated and considered to be generated by the landfill operator. It's their generated waste. In that situation, we'd probably look at it that way and provide the exemption. But if it's part of the commercial facility that's actually receiving the waste, that's where we would make that distinction and not give an exemption. Does that make sense?
So is the answer that John's question that methane that's created after that waste is, you know, decomposing, is the methane like leachate?
Mm-hmm. Okay. This would not affect the methane issue at all. Right. This is just the liners.
Yeah, I just...
You have a motion and a second.
All right, there's a motion and a second on the floor. Any additional discussion? As a reminder, the motion is to add the word non-commercial. Is that correct? Okay.
Right.
All right. There's no additional discussion. We'll call the vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries.
Now, another additional one is S17, the same issue on that. This is injection wells. You have both commercial and non-commercial injection wells.
Can you, what commercial for the purpose, for example, will this apply to an oil and gas company that's that has injection wells in their normal business?
The oil and gas company using their own injection well would be non-commercial. This would be somebody who is taking waste, putting it down the injection well for a fee.
That's what I thought. So there's a difference between non-commercial and non-business.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. So you want to add the word non-commercial?
Yes, Summers changed it with S7.
I can hear a motion.
I'll move.
Second? We have a motion second. We have discussion. Call the vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. Next item.
Next item is the item there at the end, the landfill fencing for control of windblown trash or for access control. Currently under our regulations, both are required for landfills, but there's no current item here for either.
And this is a proposed addition.
This would be an addition, that's correct.
Mr. Chairman, can I say something?
Yes.
I feel kind of the same way about this one as I do M1 barges and skimmers to clean up oil. It seems to me that you can't build a landfill or be an Exxon company or something these days without doing these things as a expected market participant. I've never seen a landfill without a fence. I don't think you could build one. I don't think you'd be sued so often by your neighbors for trespass for the trash that blows into their yard that I don't think it's an environmental regulation. I don't think it's incentivized by environmental regulation. I think it's just part and parcel of of that business. I may not have any support for that, but I just want to go on record as saying at some point, just because there's environmental regulation, it's kind of like the oil spill, site cleanup. It's just, you couldn't run a business without these things, I don't think. So I don't see it as something that's appropriate for Prop 2. I don't know if that's going to get any support, but I just wanted to go on record as saying that.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion? We have a motion. Sorry, I lost my place.
I'll move that we add it. I appreciate Bennett's opinion. I'd respectfully disagree. I think that it meets the elements of, there's a regulation. I think they do it. There might be a reasonable test that you could apply to some things, but I think that the staff has thought about that and they've made a recommendation because this is a regulatory requirement. So I'd move that we add it.
And I would surprisingly support that because I think if you look at landfills throughout the decades, there are a lot of landfills that were built without fencing, and there have been problems. And as I understand it, these are part of new regulations, right? Don't these come out of the Title C regulations, or can you tell us where?
They're in Chapter 330. I don't know the exact citations. There's one for each. There's separate ones for
the Subtitle D program.
But I think they're really a result of a lot of people complaining and the agency taking action, so they're an added requirement on landfills. And certainly if old landfills then put in that extra equipment, I'd support that.
So your support is a second to the motion?
Yeah.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Do we have a discussion?
I'd like to ask a question of staff. Does your commercial, non-commercial test apply here?
No. This would be, again, similar to the methane or leachate. This is something that would be generated This is environmental issue for the operator of the landfill as opposed to a commercial. They're not doing this to collect a fee.
What property at the commercial landfill is not exempt? Just the real property? Or
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, when you say there's a, you said that y'all deny applications for commercial use, right? Help me with what y'all said.
If somebody is running an environmental service or where they're doing something
like
pollution control, landfills, incinerators, injection wells, whatever, the pieces of it that are used for the service are not eligible, but the pieces that control emissions that would
arise from the use of whatever the unit is are eligible. So for like a incinerator, the incinerator's not eligible, but your scrubbers, and the environmental controls that you put on the incinerator are.
So at a landfill, what is still, what application for landfill property is denied under your standards?
For a commercial landfill.
Can you give me an example of that equipment? Like we have, you give me an example of fence, and you're saying fence is not that description.
Yes.
What is something that is that description?
The actual landfill cells, for instance, the liner, basically the things that they are using to receive the waste.
Can I comment here? They, virtually most of them have scales you come up on, you know, so they have at least some kind of building, at least a temporary, because they have an operator in there that's monitoring all that. They have all their heavy equipment, bulldozers, heavy rollers, compactors, that type of stuff in particular.
Yeah. So what you're saying is all this stuff about filling, I don't know how landfills operate, all the stuff about filling holes or building mounds of trash, that stuff you don't approve, but a fence that demarks the property and maybe keeps trash from blowing out or whatever all things fences do for landfills, you would say is the pollution control, is pollution control aspect for that?
Correct.
Interesting. Okay. Thanks for your explanation.
We have a motion and a second on the floor, I believe. Any additional discussion? The motion is to approve staff's recommendation to add this item to the list. We'll call the vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
For the record, the no was Don Lee. It's hard to single you out, but I don't know if we're supposed to do that. Okay. And Bennett Sandlin. I should ask staff, is that the appropriate way to handle this when we have a split?
The way that it's set up in the bylaws is to vote by roll call, and that was the way to determine, you know, just to get it for the record's sake, because we're audio recording, so it would be Mr. Nassy, aye, Mr. Kuhn, aye, Mr. Adair, aye. I realize I don't want to slow down the process.
Yes,
we do that on instances when there is consensus, but we would need some way just, yeah.
This worked.
Yeah.
They know they can right. Reflect, make the minutes reflect
right.
Correctly, and you don't have to do the whole
okay.
Shebang.
All right, thank you. All right. We're back to M1.
The next two items are M1 and M2. There's a similar issue on both of those within the description. For M1, it refers to safety equipment. For M2, it refers to personal protection. Both of those are worker safety issues as opposed to environmental. And our discussion has been whether that language should be within the description here.
So you're going to strike safety equipment out of the description? Is that?
That's the discussion, yes.
And strike personal protection
for M2.
For M2.
I'll move.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. I guess we can vote on these. Put in one motion to strike safety equipment from M1 and strike personal protection from M2. Do we have any discussion, further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. M5.
There's actually different types of discussion on this particular one. Currently, there's been discussion as to whether other types of recycling systems would might be also under this. Currently, it's limited just to distillation systems. Of course, there's other types where they filter solvents and do other things to make them reusable. Second
type of discussion on this. This is, again, would be a product recovery type of issue. So, again, the discussion is whether or not the 100% is appropriate for these.
So you're thinking of taking distillation out of the description, making it broader?
We have discussed both making it broader and also whether or not it's appropriate because at 100%.
Any discussion from the committee? Is there any compelling evidence to change it or in your mind? Put you on the spot there, sorry.
Do you have a specific actual word change that you want to recommend, or is it actually a recommendation to remove?
It's been, we've discussed both as to if this should be expanded to cover more types of solvent recovery systems, but also if any of those should be eligible at 100% with the product recovery that involves.
I'll make a motion that we defer discussion so staff can get the benefit of our discussion of the other deferred items and our cap discussion.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. All right, those in favor, discussion, any further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We will defer M5 for later discussion. M8.
M8, discussion on this one is if there should be some additional language added to the description.
Let's see where it goes here.
Currently, the second sentence reads, does not include paving for parking areas or driveways for convenience purposes. Part of our discussion has been whether we should add or for stormwater control to that part. And also, further language that's been discussed for addition is does not include gravel or dirt.
Would stormwater control be covered under a different item, or it's that stormwater control isn't really an environmental rule regulation that you're meeting, or?
On many of the applications that we receive, the people do ask for stormwater control for paving, but citations typically is where they run into trouble finding something, or rule actually requires that they do that. Stormwater control, there is a provision for that. I believe it's in, I think it's W57, is stormwater conveyances.
Any further discussion?
Is this first language, just so everybody understands this issue, paving of outdoor vehicular traffic areas in order to meet or exceed an adopted environmental regulation or law? I mean, that helps bracket the eligibility. I don't know that.
How much clarity does this item provide? I mean, the idea of the ECL, right, especially A, is that, hey, these items are things we've already decided. And to describe this item, you have to start putting in these tests that are the basic tests of the program. I'm trying to decide how much clarity and predetermination this is providing. It doesn't look like it's predetermining much.
I'm not sure.
In other words, you have to do basic analysis. The idea is you come in under a lower fee and you get it because we don't have to analyze it. And this requires analysis, doesn't it?
All applications have to be analyzed. We have to review all of them.
It's level of analysis.
It does take less for most tier ones. That's not always true, but in most cases that would be true.
Right. This just doesn't appear to me to limit the analysis to the same degree that these other items in this list do. But this one seems much broader at figuring out what that pavement is doing. I mean, we talk about storm, and I'm assuming you mean stormwater quality, not stormwater volume, because there's regulations on both. One's environmental, one is I don't know. Who consider, do we consider stormwater runoff volume, which is drainage issues, to be, those regulations to be environmental? I'm not sure we do. That's more of a development issue, right? And flooding downstream. And we have regulations there. And of course, paving works against that regulation, works for keeping sediment out of what's running off your land. That's an environmental issue. So I kind of understand. I'm just suggesting this doesn't seem appropriate for A. It seems appropriate maybe for the Tier 3 analysis or some other analysis, where, but it doesn't seem in the same category as all these other things, where we've looked at it. That's just my reaction.
Joe, it looks like, I mean, in the description it says environmental paving located for industrial facilities. Are you getting a lot outside of industrial facilities?
We receive some. I'm not sure exactly that, that industrial is really defined anywhere. We see a fair number of commercial properties that are, that ask for that. It's not a production facility, but something like a store.
You know, that,
warehouse, that's sort of a...
It's commercial property, frankly, that this all start, when you start talking about the paving, we start looking at and saying, that's what we really want looked at. I mean, are you telling me, according to how I do my parking lot at my new big box store, I can call that all pollution control?
So is your recommendation, or one of the ideas, is to actually include the language of stormwater control to say that if it's for stormwater control, it's not under the
title.
It's
not eligible.
So I think, you know, I think it's a good constriction of this. I mean, I hear you, Don, and I think this actually has value if it's tightened up so that you're not having to go through as much analysis. And I think if you're going to give somebody 100%, you ought to be comfortable with that it ticks that all off. Is there any other reason other than air quality that you all can think of? Isn't this an exclusively an air quality?
The primary issue with paving in the regulations is dust control. It's under Chapter 111. Is the primary section.
I mean, I'd support it, you know, to get to the point of making it more useful to y'all, and unless other people have concerns, saying paving of outdoor vehicular traffic areas in order to meet or exceed an adopted air quality rule regulation, I would actually say comma law or permit. Because I think there might be confusion. If it's a permit condition in an air quality permit, I think we would all agree, okay. But I'm supportive of making sure we don't see big box parking lots exempted just because they make up an argument that they're stormwater control. So, I mean, I
agree. I move we add air quality to that first sentence.
It seems that industrial environments would have environmental paving because they discharge all their water out of permitted outfall. So any contamination is going through to a place where you have discharge limits. So I'm not sure. Are you trying to restrict with the air comment?
Well, in the description it says vehicular traffic. So if it's paving under process areas or anything like that, I think that is outside of the scope of this, correct?
I haven't looked at the list, but isn't water quality or conveyance systems as part of a wet water quality treatment process or wastewater treatment process? Are those on? A conveyance system would be included in that, wouldn't it?
Yes, it's a
that's the W57.
Okay, I'll try to move us forward. I'll make a motion here. I'd move that we recommend to staff that they add the word air quality in place of environmental, and that they strike and then add the word permit.
And does that give you...
Sorry, air quality permit. Maybe environmental permit. Well, air quality permit. Why did we leave permit out last time? We talked about this in 07. You guys remember?
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Would your motion also include what they proposed adding about dirt and gravel?
I would say that we would recommend staff implement that change if they think it's appropriate.
Okay.
Second.
On W57, I don't see anything specific to paving for water control purposes. So I don't want to eliminate you know, if you're having to pave something to contain water for permitted outfall sampling purposes and what have you, then where would that fall into this if we make this specific to air quality?
For the applications that we've seen for stormwater control, what they're talking about is the paving itself is a channel to send the stormwater to the retention pond. And I believe that would fit under W57.
And so the finding the water quality, not volume, it's regulations.
Yeah, typically.
John, I'd accept a friendly amendment to my motion that with the clarification that W57, staff believes W57 covers water conveyances that are associated with the water quality treatment, conveyance and treatment system. That is in the title of W57.
Yeah, so you're saying that paving is a conveyance system?
If it's actually sending the storm water to a retention pond or some type of control system.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry. This is kind of if we need to delay this or something, then I'm just trying to get a picture here of what we're including and what we're not including.
Under M8, this would be based on the language from Mike Nassy and all for air quality. This would be pretty much limited to dust control paving, I would think. That's the only thing that I can immediately think of.
So, Don, it's like in a rock crushing facility.
We're keeping industrial, right?
In the title.
Yeah, it's like in a rock crushing facility. They require people to put paving because they don't want a whole bunch of dust coming up from the rock crushing and from the vehicles going back and forth. That's part of an air quality permit that would apply here.
Mike, would you accept a friendly amendment of including the word industrial, not just in the title, but in the description?
Sure.
At an industrial site. I mean, it doesn't necessarily need to be an industrial roadway, but I mean, it's a site issue. What comes down to, Don, is that there are roads that if you pave them, they have notable air quality benefits. I just don't want to limit it that road actually has, you know, big yellow iron on it all the time. I mean, a car is a car. If it's air quality. So to restate my amended motion, I recommend that the commission use its discretion to add references to gravel or dirt as it sees fit and to change the description of item M8 to add the words air quality in place of environmental and add the word permit in law. So you'd say or permit instead of or law. You'd say rule, regulation, law, or permit. And that...
Just insert at the beginning, at an industrial site.
At an industrial site be added after the word permit.
That works, right? Mm-hmm.
Cyrus, do you accept that second?
Second.
We have a restated motion and a second. Do we have additional discussion? We'll call the vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. In case anybody's wondering, it would be kind of head in mind to try to get through part A before we break for lunch. I don't think it would take that much longer.
And we only have a few more items.
Okay. All right.
Next item is M12. This is structures, enclosures, containment areas, pads is the current title for that. This was added originally for composting type operations, and for clarity, discussion has been that we should possibly add for composting operations that are to the title.
Do we need a motion for that clarity? Any discussion? Are we okay with allowing staff to to do what they need for that? Okay. M13.
Currently in the description, it talks about equipment used to capture method generated by decomposition of site-generated waste material. Discussion has been whether we should change it from decomposition of site-generated to decomposition of waste material on-site.
Don't you need that change if you have a commercial company, somebody recovering natural gas off a landfill?
If it was a recovery system with, again, a product production, that may be an issue on the percentage on that. But for one where, say, a landfill is sending it to a flare, for instance, that's waste they did not generate, but it decomposes on site. Their control is to flare that. That would certainly seem to be something that might could be covered here.
But it wouldn't cover, for example, if you were someone in the business of making electricity and you decided as your input you were going to use poultry waste or waste as the input to your electric generation. See what I'm saying? Then you're really an electric generating plant that's using methane recovery to generate electricity versus somebody who's trying to make sure that methane doesn't go. Right?
Again, that would go to the issue on the 100%. If there's a production aspect to it, would 100% be appropriate for that?
But you have the discretion, even if it meets this criteria, but you see that its purpose is not just pollution control, but because they're making a product, you have that discretion to send it back, even if it's on the list.
Or recommend that they file a Tier 3.
Recommend that they file it. Okay.
To be eligible, it has to meet all the criteria on the list, including the 100%.
I'll make a motion that we encourage staff to pursue its idea of replacing site-generated waste material with waste material generated on-site.
All right. We have a second?
Second that.
Motion and second. Further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries.
M17, on this one, this is for the low NOx combustion system, and it is restricted in the description to those that are used to generate power or to generate or to operate a drilling rig. From our discussion, the problem with these type of applications thus far has been that nobody can tell us which pieces of the equipment are the low NOx combustion system. And if I understand right, it's also true from discussions with the manufacturers. They've been unable to tell us exactly what would fit here.
So are you recommending moving this?
Or coming up with language to somehow tighten it up so that basically they have to give us evidence as to exactly what fits in here, as opposed to just asking for the low NOx combustion system without telling us what the components are.
Do you have a proposal on actual language that would say, you know, components of low NOx combustion system related to pollution control, or do you have a recommendation for us to consider in terms of language, or you haven't
not
gotten there yet?
Not specific language at this time, no.
Okay. Are you saying you've asked that question of manufacturers and they can't give you an answer?
That's my understanding. I haven't actually worked on those applications myself, but that's from the discussions we've had, that is my understanding.
And the alternative would be to move it to Tier 3? How would you handle it? What do you want out of us?
Basically, just to get better clarification.
And the issue is that, like he was saying earlier, we cannot verify what part of it is pollution control. We do not know what kind of equipment that make it NOx control. And as a result of that, we prefer to remove it from the list of now, unless you have any data for us, if any of you have a data or any recommendation, to remove it as of now, and anybody want to file, they have option of filing as tier 2 to be 100 or tier 3. That option is still there.
I think we've got compelling.
I think staff's description fits the tier 3 category pretty well. I'd move that.
Just to make sure we're, I think the spirit is good, but maybe the fix is you add the word solely. Components of power generation units designed solely to reduce NOx generation by operation of a drilling rig. And that gives people the ability to demonstrate to you that that's their sole purpose. They're going to have to demonstrate that it does it. And remember, the word is components here. You already have components. It's not the whole thing.
How is this different from A88? Back when we're talking about low NOx there, other than it applies to a drilling rig.
I mean, what I hear the staff saying is that people are coming in, citing this item, and they're listing indeterminate components. They can't identify the components. And so you're having to sit there and try to figure that out. It's not meeting this purpose of the first category of BCL. So it just seems like until we know what we're talking about, and you have a consistent thing you can label, then it's better handled under Tier 3.
I'm going to ask if this is a helpful change, because I think this is really staff's call. But so in the title, it says low NOx combustion system. You could change the word system to components. And in the description, it says components of a power generating units, of power generating units designed, and I would add the word solely, to reduce NOx generation by operation of a drilling rig. That way, you know, you're going to be able to use that screen and you'll be able to kick out things that don't meet that test. Is that useful to y'all? I mean, I don't want to create something that's not useful to y'all.
I guess based on how we review it, I think the time we spend on this, we do not tier one. The staff supposed not to spend a lot of time reviewing tier one. That is the issue that you all may consider in making some recommendation. Because anything that takes more time to review takes the time away from reviewing other applications. And the time of review is based on the fee. That's why the fee is low compared with the other tiers.
And the remedy to that is you respond by letter saying that we believe you need to submit a Tier 2 or a Tier 3 application. I think you have that discretion to do that. I think there might be a use for this item if we just give you the tools to kick people out.
But if it is solely, then they wouldn't have to go through the effort of going through the calculation.
Right. Right. There's no calculate. That's why, I mean, I wouldn't really support that word. And I've shown that I don't really support the use of that word. But here, to do what you guys want to do, which is not have to go through the calculation, right? The kind of the burden's on them to show you that it's 100%.
Okay, we have a motion, correct? That was in a motion?
Yes.
I'll second it.
All right, we have a motion second. Any further discussion? Those support say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
I'm going to vote no. I don't think that makes sense.
That have voted no, Mr. Lee and Mr. Weaver. Motion carries.
And I believe that's the last item on Part A of the list.
Huh? Okay, what are the desires of the committee? Ironically, it's about the same time as the last meeting.
When were we going to take up the issue of the global warming gas reporting and controls for the electronic industry, whether... Was that going to be part of this?
Yeah, I was actually going to suggest we discuss that before we break for lunch. Oh, while we're on Part A.
It's a Part A thing. We can finish up Part A.
All right, so I believe everyone was passed this out. I also sent it out last night.
kind of the purpose of this was to give everyone enough background information as well as some examples of equipment that would fall under, in addition to the Part A list that's kind of described in the last section regarding greenhouse gas replacement projects, sort of similar to item A42, which is for CFC replacement projects.
Remind me, is this was conditioned on these regulations going into effect, which they're not currently. Is that, do I recall that correctly?
Yes.
If this happened, would this committee not want to have a meeting shortly thereafter to dive headlong into this topic? Mr. Chairman, will we have the ability to do that? And I mean, we're an ongoing committee, right?
Right.
I think the thought, then it's a good point, but there's a three-year review cycle for the ECL, and I think this is, the proposal is to add this to Part A of the ECL, and I think that we would probably as a committee, and we can all discuss this, but we might stockpile some things that need to be added, but we might not necessarily put the agency to having to pick up and revise the ECL every year. I don't think they want us to recommend that. So the idea is we're in a review cycle. Let's pick up the things we expect to be coming down the pike. And there's some basis for this. The precedent for this is the fact that the legislation in 2007, House Bill 3732, had this element of if that kind of regulation goes into place, that the commission is authorized to proceed, and in fact, it's mandated to include it on the list. So I think there's a general idea that we should anticipate this. The policy reason would be that we may well have to start installing this equipment before the ECL is amended again. So we're trying to, it's kind of like in between the legislative sessions, we're trying to fix this problem so when they come into effect, Part A serves the regulated industry and it provides the tax benefit that was intended by the program and the 2007 legislation, and we don't have to wait for the next three-year cycle. That's what that's,
It would there be a way, Mike, though?
Sorry. To be clear, they're eligible whether we include this or not.
Right.
This isn't about whether they're eligible for an exemption designation or not. It's about whether we can predetermine the amount now, so if they don't have to do any analysis at the time it comes in.
That's right. And my point is that 11.31K of the Act has an item that includes if EPA regulates carbon dioxide as a pollutant, thou shalt include it on this list.
It gets less time for analysis. So,
yeah.
But our question is there compelling evidence that we know the proportion now? And I think that's just what I want to explore. Do we know the proportion? What are we talking about, 100%?
Yeah, it would be 100% for this type of equipment that I've given examples for.
It's a very good question, Don. I think that Robert and I certainly are going to have some proposals later, have screened out anything that's a tough call. That if we think it's a no-brainer, 100%, we're bringing it today. If
right.
We think there's a question of the type item, we're not going to bring it up. We're not going to try to predict what the percentage is unless it's a no-brainer. That's the spirit of this, as I understand it.
And I tried to discuss that here.
Do we have experiences? Do we know what this is? And
the way I understand what you're presenting, though, what you're looking at is a back-end recovery.
There actually is no recovery. It's effectively a replacement. The specific example here that I'm talking about with it's almost a back-end abatement technology where a different gas is used that's completely destroyed in the process. It's still emitted. None of it actually goes out in the product. It's not emitted as a greenhouse gas anymore by switching over to a different.
For the switch is the pending mandate.
Correct. This technology was developed for that very reason.
Mike, is the other way to approach, are we allowed on the Part B list to slightly change words? You know, because it talks about regulating carbon dioxide, it doesn't talk about regulating GHGs.
Yes, Cyrus, I would fully support, I mean, because the legislation says that list is non-exclusive. Mm-hmm. I think that it would be a very good mechanism indeed to include carbon equivalent greenhouse gases in the B, is it 16 item?
Right. And that's still if they adopt a final rule or regulation. Right.
And what I would say to facilitate kind of Don's comment about, well, don't let's not force an arbitrary decision on percentages, we might keep the B16 item at V, okay, but we might have a Part A item that we would all agree is 100%, and we would include language like that is in B16, that this Part A item only applies if EPA mm-hmm. is regulated.
Right, because B16 actually only refers to captured carbon dioxide. It doesn't refer to monitoring or reducing. It only refers to sequestering.
Right.
If I read it correctly.
Some of the examples I brought up in here are like monitoring equipment, thermal oxidation. Those are already on the Part A list. You could argue that the endangerment finding does declare that greenhouse gases are a pollutant. So there is already the regulation there for at least that part. And then you've got the reporting rule, which is in place. So I think you're
monitoring. Who does the reporting rule cover right now?
Currently it covers, they left out the electronic sector, and they left out power transmission. The rule, the revision that brings those sectors into that rule, the proposal is out. It's not published for public comment. I think that'll probably come in the next few days.
So there'll probably be some new requirements on folks in terms of monitoring in addition to some reduction. Is the reduction, the GHG replacement, is that to get out of the reporting rule?
Or no, the reporting rule is going to include you either way.
Either way, okay.
Has staff had a chance to look at this? Do you want to comment?
Well, we did look at it. The regulation has not been passed yet, and if you look at it, CFC, try to compare with CFC, we know that the is chlorinated compound. The compound they are talking about is not chlorinated. The only thing they have is a fluorine atom induced molecules, and there are various physical and chemical properties that may be different. So as of now, we cannot give anything substantial unless you have a specific question for us. In terms of monitoring, like you said already, we have some like emission control. It's already there in the A list. And there are some like carbon dioxide equivalent you were talking about. Your mention of is carbon dioxide is in B section in there, that if they regulate, that will be in there. So I think it will be left for you how you want to make your recommendation on this. And if you have any specific question, we'll be willing to answer it.
So the section that Robert wrote on where it says A-XX, greenhouse gas replacement projects, whether to add that into the A, Part A list, to where it would have to, in other words, you put it in there and then say, you know, it must be to rule or reg. Would that not be something that you would consider putting in there at this point?
Well, Part A, let's go back again. The purpose of Tier 1 or Part A list is something that has already been evaluated and looked into and determined that is actually what it is. We do not see, unless any of you have any data, we haven't seen any data which has been already evaluated that this is what it is, or any publication that shows this is what it actually is. So I can't say yes or no to your answer because I haven't seen any data, and I don't think any of us have seen any data.
So staff has no experience with anything like this?
Not yet.
I would be more supportive of adding something to Part B that was a catch-all for a future rule than I would be to adding something to Part A. you know, before it's been evaluated, whether it's 100% or not.
Yeah, my question was, is if you can't release a greenhouse gas emission and this equipment comes in and goes from whatever it is to zero, that's pretty evident, that's all. But I understand.
And if I have any real reluctance here, I also have some reluctance around the term projects, which I think is a very broad word, versus property used.
I'm not particular to the language at all, so that was just me throwing something out there.
If you talk about reducing a regulated emission, you have property that's used to reduce a regulated emission, and that's what we're talking about here, of getting determinations to exempt.
Right, we can always put it under a Tier 2. If it's 100%, you can put it under a Tier 2 application.
And property that just does that is Tier 2, I mean, is 100%. I'm not against that. It's just that we're going in a predetermination list, and especially when we use a term like projects, and I think, does anyone here know what type of projects may be devised to do that?
Well,
know what you know now. I'm just, projects is an awful broad word.
What I was trying to say is, you know, I said projects, I meant property.
Actually, you were copying language that's already in the ECL that I'm probably uncomfortable with as well, right? So I don't want to, I'm not trying to harp on you.
No, I know. This was.
It follows A42 language, right?
Right.
Maybe I'll put it in the form of a motion because everybody out in the audience wants lunch. How about I move that we defer this item under the thought that we would first also discuss it in the context of the Part B discussion, which we're going to have, about what's possible under Part B, and then also with the idea that the electronic sector might come back with a little bit more detailed and revised proposal that might provide the basis for staff to know that there's a technical basis to include it, admittedly with some contingent language. Okay, so defer it, have an opportunity for more detailed demonstration to be submitted.
What's our timing in all this? Did we need to have, I know the later discussions are most important, were we trying to have closure on the Part A and Part B stuff today, or?
That would be good if we could. Part A.
Yes.
Part B is also. But again, I don't want to rush through something and us make things worse than they are. So we have a motion. Do we have a second? The motion was to defer discussion on this item until Part B. Motion second. We have additional discussion. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. And with that, I think before we go to lunch, in case we lose any of the audience after lunch, the timeline, as I understand it, is on the TCQ's website. Is that correct for these rules? So if you want to look at the timeline, there will be, I should have mentioned this in the opening comments, but as of now, at least the tentative timeline is the public hearings will be in July. So we'll have more time for public comments. That's after it goes to the Texas Register and it goes through the process. So, and I have a copy of this if you can't find it.
Bob, we never voted on the minutes, too. Did you want to take that up after lunch, or?
Let's do that.
After lunch?
Yes, that's all right.
Okay.
I haven't really looked at it yet. Maybe I can come back in time to kind of peruse it.
Okay.
What do you think, 1:30, or is that too long?
Yes.
1:30? Okay.
Too long.
That's too long.
Too long.
1:15?
Yeah, let's do it.
Can we do 1:15? We'll try it.
Okay.
All right, we'll adjourn until, not adjourn, but defer. Recess. There you go. Thank you.
Yeah.
So. Right? Yeah.